Hello, my name is Dr. Vanessa Kimball, and I am a baker. But I'm also someone who has studied and researched the impact of bread on our health for many years. I run the Sourdough School in Northamptonshire, and my specialism is bread and the gut microbiome and the impact on our mental health. But I'm also trained as a nutrigenetic practitioner, meaning I look at the way that bread impacts people according to their genetics. It helps me to personalise bread. And in this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to someone who I hope you are going to find as interesting as I did. What I'd love is for you to listen and think about the bread that you bake, eat, and share with your family. Because bread is a staple, it's our most basic food, and I believe it is the foundation to good health. Okay, I'm hiding in the bookstore at the bottom of Daunt Books here with one of my all-time heroes, Tim Spector. Tim and I met, I think, at the end of 2015, maybe 2016, and you were asking me about bread, and I was asking you about bread. We've learned a lot since then.
We have indeed.
Tim, what did you learn about yourself when you were eating and testing against yourself with your blood sugar monitor?
Well, most breads that I tested, regardless of what they look like, gave me a big sugar peak, which meant it was unhealthy for me, gave me some inflammation, increased my appetite, etc., etc. Until I started experimenting with sourdough, where the peak got a little bit less, and it only really went down when it was had a high proportion of rye in it, and those really high fibre grains. So I was able to get, you know, a really modest peak, about a third of the size of normal peaks, when I had a rye sourdough. And that's, to me, is about the only bread I can sort of eat regularly, safely. The others I just have as rare treats.
Tim, when you look at that peak in blood sugar and you take that over a lifetime, how important do you think bread really is?
It's hugely important because it's one of our major staples that most people in this country have twice a day. And there's very few other foods that we have so often. And yet we, you know, spend very little on it, don't think about it very much, and don't realise how crucial it is, because it's actually also one of the major sources of fibre for most British people as well. So not only, you know, it can be good and bad, and we treat them all the same, and we tend to buy the cheapest one that's the most convenient to go in the toaster and it's just done. But I think all of us need to learn much more about bread, both from the good, the bad, and the ugly, and realize that actually by tweaking our daily bread habits, we can make really big increments into our health long term, because, as you said, most people have these things daily and you can make big differences. And so I think sorting bread out is a really essential part of optimizing our health.
From a political standpoint, looking at the food industry as a whole, you've been very vocal about the way in which you have talked about ultra processed foods and the way that we make our foods. And when it comes to bread and flour, and you look, for example, at the way that most of the industry uses refined white flour, we're throwing away and actually dismantling the whole grain. All of your studies so far, the talk through Sarah, it's quite clear that whole grain and the intact plant is a serious benefit to health. Would you agree with this?
No, yeah, absolutely. The old way of making bread, where you kept the, you know, the plant, the seeds, everything intact, rather than stripping it off and grinding it up into ever finer particles, and then having to re-add in vitamins and nutrients into it, is where we've gone very wrong. And the sad thing is today that, yeah, you actually pay more to get an intact plant than you do the refined product of it because of the sheer volumes done. So the ultra processing of bread has given us a really fast, cheap source of energy, but it is depriving us of many of the essential nutrients that we need. And so we need to start going back, realize what the key parts of good bread were, and in a way relearning what for the last 50 years we've been going down the wrong route.
Looking at the impact of reducing fiber across the population and polyphenols and diversity, you have made it very clear that if we can increase all of these things, including, you know, to the general population, there will be a significant improvement in public health. You would agree that you have been saying that for a long time.
Yeah.
Would you argue that there is a case to protect the public? Because you said the word we need to look at bread. Would you argue that there is a case for the food industry to be legislated to reduce the refinement of flour and to actually, because all ultra-processed bread starts with the processing of flour, would you or could you see a point at which we say a certain percentage of bread has to be whole grain or has to be has to include fibre because of how powerful it is?
I think that's a bit idealistic. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. We're so far away from that. At the moment, we should just change labelling on the existing breads to make it clear the difference that there are between them and the difference between the ultra-processed varieties and the only very lightly processed breads that we're seeing, highlighting things like, you know, the fibre value, highlighting the negative effects of all the additives and artificial ingredients on those extreme cheap breads. Mm-hmm. That should be the first step, as a bare minimum. At the moment, most of the breads you can't really tell very easily on the label what you're eating. And I think that, you know, yours is a utopian idea that is could actually, you know, if we had a decent government and who are concerned about our health, yes. But at the moment, people can't tell, you know, a difference and there's tenfold difference in fibre contents between them. It's really hard for the public to know what they're eating. And I think that's the first step, is what we should be doing. Because if people switch from low fibre to high fibre breads and they cut out a lot of these artificial ingredients, you know, they'll be instantly seeing the benefits. And at the moment, there's a three or fourfold difference in price between them. But with volumes, you know, you can get that right down. So we have to find a way to promote the more expensive, healthier breads and de-optimize, if you like, the cheap, nasty ones, or, you know, put a health warning on them. So this eating this bread all the time is going to give you diabetes and obesity.
Do you think that we're in a catch-22 where most people now, and again, listening to some of your work, you were suggesting that there could be as much, I think it's about 50% of people have got a compromised gut microbiome. Do you think that we're in a catch-22 where when people do eat fibre, it makes them uncomfortable and they're therefore avoiding fibre and exacerbating the situation?
Oh, definitely, yes. If you've been very fibre deprived and someone says, you know, oh, here's some of Vanessa's bread, this will change your life. They might be overwhelmed by that. Their body cannot cope with that much fiber. So I think what we need to learn is just how you slowly wean someone onto that fiber, which could actually take several months. You know, we've been thinking about, oh, you can just do this in a few days, but no. Speak to gastroenterology colleagues of mine that, you know, they're very conscious of this and realize that it's a very slow process. And little by little, you just say, I want you to get up to here. You know, you want to have a bread that's got at least, you know, 6 or 7 grams of fibre in it as your first level, not one that's got 1 gram of fibre in it. Let's do this gradually, you know, 1 week at a time.
I think if you can rebalance your microbes, I would imagine the theory is you could actually positively impact the way your body behaves, and the way your, it is possible that you can retrain the whole and rebalance your microbes to do
that. Absolutely, yeah. I think if you can build up your gut microbiome from a poor state to a healthy state where you've got lots of diverse different species in there, all producing lots of different chemicals, what we call postbiotics, your immune system, your metabolism is optimized, you can then do things that you couldn't have done before. So you can have an excess fiber load without any problem. You can also eat the occasional processed food. You can have, you know, the odd croissant and get away with it, because in a way you will be much more resilient to these shocks to the system if you've built up this really good base. So it's really important that people do that.
Looking at the gut microbiome as being central to your work, and it has been to my work for many years, I guess my approach to bread has been lifestyle medicine. To use it to avoid ultra-processed foods, to be part of a community, to nourish. And one of the most important things, I know you go to Spain, you love, I've seen your Instagram, to eat socially. And a sequenced eating, and it was again you who mentioned this to me a long time ago, the way and the order in which you eat your food before you eat your bread and then with your bread, that impacts your the rate of assimilation of carbohydrate and the way your body responds to bread. Can I ask, how do you now eat your bread when you are socializing, and have you noticed that the sequence in which you eat your bread or what you eat your bread with makes an impact to your the impact of bread on you?
There is evidence that the sequence of your meal is important, and basically now I've learned about myself is not to have my bread naked.
And that means, what a shame!
It means not that I need to put clothes on, but the bread itself has to be with something. So yeah, if I've got some particularly good bread I want to taste, I will add some balsamic vinegar or some other artisan vinegars, or particularly high quality virgin olive oil, extra virgin olive oil, dip it in the bread, taste it that way. Or I'd have it with some cheese, or if it made for a breakfast, it would be with avocado. So, you know, I think there is some evidence that people who do have some vinegar before eating bread have a lower peak than they would do if they just went straight to the bread. Now, I haven't done, that's my next set of experiments I'm going to do shortly, but I haven't tested myself on that theory, but it seems to be pretty consistent with many people.
Yeah, for me, game changer, absolute game changer. And I think, you know, knowing and seeing the impact of that, I would suspect that is one of the contributing factors towards the Mediterranean diet, a combination of oil and vinegar.
Which in the UK we don't often get, we don't have that culture of, you know, just get given your bread on your empty plate and you nibble it while you're waiting for your first course, which is probably a very dangerous thing to do.
No, it's probably the opposite of what we should be doing, actually.
Yeah.
Tim, you've been a huge supporter over many years of my work. The 10-minute sourdough, you make your own sourdough at home now. Do you actually manage to do that? I did dedicate the book to you on the basis that I thought, well, if he doesn't make it now, I'm like at that point.
No, I do yeah. Regularly make my sourdough, yes, and I've got a system down that I've sort of reduced everything to its basic bare minimum, you know, often using the same pot to do everything. Some things you may not approve of, but I've definitely got the time right down. So it is absolutely possible to do a 10-minute sourdough. I can absolutely tell people. Yeah, as long as you're well organized and you can do things, you know, exactly, you've got a job that you can nip down and quickly do things and nip back up and do another podcast, then yes, absolutely. It does fit in. And I think, yeah, for many people, it's much easier than they would have dreamt of. And once you get into that routine, it takes a little bit of time to get comfortable with all these things. So you know I've stopped weighing and measuring, actually.
That's fantastic. It means that you can literally be...
You can see it and you say, okay, I need a bit more water. Yeah. You know, that's about right. That's fine. And yes, and that saves a lot of time once you start doing it by look and by feel.
It's certainly, and there's something really beautiful about getting that bread out of the oven and smelling the bread and having something that fills the whole house.
And I think, yes, and also once you stop precisely weighing things, it becomes part of your personality in a way, because you're just saying, well, this is just me, you know, this is very much how I do it. I'm just, you know, putting a bit of mother in here and not worrying too much about, you know, exactly what's going on, because I'm fairly sure that I know it's going to be pretty good. And doesn't mean I couldn't do it better. I'm not saying, you know, but I'm at all good, but I say you make bread that, at least for me, is tasty.
In the book, you touched on fermentation itself being a bit of a game changer. You talked about kind of gluten degradation. You talked about the vinegar that the microbes produce. Do you feel that all bread should be fermented as we evolved in this way? We've only really not made fermented bread for 120 years. I mean, if you could wave a magic wand, would you say, right, everyone, ferment your bread, it's a game changer? Is that something you would say to most people?
I think if you could do it for the same price as children would unfermented bread, and I had a magic wand to do that, and it was as easy, yes, definitely.
That's cool. Fantastic, Tim, thank you so much. I have been recommending your books for as long as I can remember.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this one.
I thoroughly enjoyed it, actually. I sat down to glance through it and ended up reading it, which is... interesting for me, because I often read people's words and disagree with them. I'm afraid I couldn't find anything to disagree with in that.
Terrible. So, I can't have pushed it enough.
No. Thank you. And I'm just, on behalf of everyone who works with me at Sourdough School, Sourdough Club, your work, you may not necessarily see it, but on the ground, your writing, your information sharing has been a game changer for hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of people. I get to talk to a lot of those people, and I get to listen to the way that they have been empowered to take hold of their food, to understand themselves, and to make sensible decisions about the food that they're feeding themselves and their family. So I'm going to say, on behalf of everyone, and myself included, thank you for sharing this knowledge. Thank you for writing books. Thank you for being so, well, succinct and speaking with such clarity. I know everyone who would want to would say thank you for doing that, because it is amazing.
Well, it's been a great pleasure, and the journey's not finished.
So no, not even slightly.
So hopefully, you know.
You're planning your next one.
There's always another one, that's right. Yeah, there's always more we can talk about.
For now, this one is... the one that I think everyone should certainly be putting in their trolleys. Absolutely no shame in saying that Tim's books are the ones I recommend first to anyone who's going to make bread, because there's so much in there on every other aspect. So there you go, Tim.
There you go, Vanessa.
Top of my reading list.
Thank you very much.
If you enjoyed listening to that podcast as much as I enjoyed chatting with my guests, then you might like to find out a little bit more about what I do. Well, I teach courses both online and in person at thesourdoughschool.com. I also write regularly for sourdough.co.uk. And I have a couple of Instagram accounts that you might like to follow. Sourdough School, Sourdough Club. Oh, and I have a personal one, Vanessa Kimball. I really do love to hear people's thoughts and feedback about, well, the books I write, the podcast, the features, or if you have any questions, don't hesitate to get in touch. Thank you for listening.